set. Okay, let's go ahead and call to order the June 22nd workshop. And with that, let's rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Irene, would you go ahead and do our roll call, please?
Mr. Henderson.
Here.
Mrs. Lucas.
A present.
Mr. Dolny.
Here.
Mr. Jones.
Here.
Mr. Cuff.
Here.
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mr. Beebe.
Yes.
We have a quorum.
Okay, thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for coming tonight. And at this time, I want to go ahead and recognize we have with us the BEAC committee. And if each one of you would like to introduce yourselves to the rest of the planning board, that'd be great.
Okay, I'm Glenn Parklow. I'm chairman of that committee.
Okay, Glenn, welcome.
John Capcar.
Hey, John.
Jeffrey Seib.
Jeffrey, thank you. Thank you all for attending tonight. We appreciate your input. And with that, we've got, this is our first workshop of the rewrite of the landscape and irrigation section of our land development code. And we have, I believe, a total of five workshops scheduled. And you've all been given those dates and everything, and it's over the next several Wednesdays at this time, this place. I would like tonight to see if we could try to get a pretty good jump into the review of it. We'll go page by page, line by line, but if we're all able to go ahead and try to get a good hour and a half to 2 hours in tonight, we may, you know, depending on how far we get along, we may be able to, in the future, not have to do the full four or five workshops if it moves along at a pace that everybody's comfortable with. So that would be my goal tonight, would try to get, you know, at least an hour and a half to 2 hours in. And so hopefully that works to everybody else's schedule. I know it's a, you know, it's an imposition to have us all here, but it's something that we, as part of our responsibility as the planning and plan development board, is the code and the rewrite and everything. So very good. With that, I'm going to let Mr. Tyner and staff do just a brief introduction on how we got to this point, and sure. Then after that, we will go and review it page by page. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the BEAC for also participating in this joint, you know, kind of partnership workshop. Just a brief background on our land development code. Our first chapters of our land development code were adopted in 2008 for our first unified land development code. And we have always, we actually promised City Council and we promised the Planning Board that, like all codes, it's not going to stay stagnant. We're always going to look at them, make sure they meet, you know, today's standards, and you know, it's a breathing document. And we know that, you know, as times change, and we want to make sure that our codes are current. Back in 2010, we did, as planning board members may recall, we modified our assigned chapter, and that was very successful. Where what staff likes to do is try to get as much public participation as possible, and try to get all the feedback that we can to make the good changes. Like, for example, the sign code wasn't just staff sitting in a vacuum of creating a sign code or a revision to the sign code. We really wanted, you know, the professionals involved with that. We wanted the Chamber of Commerce involved with that. We wanted a group called the Flagler County Association of Responsible Development involved with that. And so we made some successful changes that have been worked very well for our land development code. The landscape chapter is one of those codes that was adopted in 2008, was never modified, never tweaked, since that time, and that was, what, eight years ago, going on 9 years ago, so it's quite a long time. As you remember, in 2008, when we did the Land Development Code and our landscape chapter, what happened to development and activity kind of decreased. So we really didn't have a whole lot of time applying the code, applying the landscape code. I mean, we did, but we knew some issues coming here and there. I often get feedback from the development community about this isn't working, or this may not be working as efficiently as possible. And internal staff, we have some things definitely in our code that, after we practice it for quite some time, found out that it's not working. We've heard a lot of complaints about the Land Development Code, landscape chapter, being very hard to understand. And we really tried to make it, in this preliminary draft, a little bit easier to understand and easier to follow. And what we did as staff, and throughout the years, Butler, planning staff, the manager, all of us would hear feedback from time to time on certain sections of the landscape code, and all codes for that matter, but we're just focusing now on the landscape code. And what we ended up doing is city staff, wanted to work with the Flagler County Association of Responsible Development first, to work with that group, and we do have some member representation here of that group. And let me tell you about FGAR. FGAR has very competent, professional individuals that would help municipalities in Volusia County, Flagler County, and around the Central Florida area of helping local governments work with the codes. And what the group consists of, you have attorneys, you have landscape architects, you have developers, the folks who are actually working out in the field and applying the Land Development Code. So we've got a really good balance of individuals that could logically tell us and work together with them from a regulatory standpoint and how it's practiced in the field. And it works. It's a great relationship where you have our landscape architect, our planning staff, and the private sector kind of working it together would make sense of this code. So your first draft that you actually see is a combined effort of these two groups of working together and trying to create a first product draft that we're going through. I think we did a real good job of picking out a lot of the issues that both staff agree on and development community agree on to make it a better code. Now, we still have, as we go through these workshops, again, it's very key that we continue to have our public participation. Cindy from City of Palm Coast did a great public press release that was in the paper. We have online a web page that you can go on to make comments. We want the citizens to make comments of the Land Development Code, and there's certain sections and there are suggestions that they may have to continue this public participation process as we go through this draft. And I anticipate at a later date, once we start compiling some of these comments, we'll bring them to you. Staff will go through them, kind of what we did on the last modification to the code, where we would have a spreadsheet and how staff's addressing it, or what our professional opinion is of the comment itself, and then bring those to you. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, that's my introduction. And again, our first draft was a cooperative effort. I'm trying to put that together for you.
Appreciate that. And let me just explain what you've got in front of you, just in case you aren't completely sure. We have a clean version of the draft that starts with page one, the table of contents, and goes to page 29. Okay. Then after that, we have the strike-through version. And that's, I think that's where we want to start is with page 3031, because it gives you the new language underlined. It gives you strike-through language of the existing code, and then in parentheses at the end of a paragraph or a section, it'll give you sometimes a little sentence on the background on why this was changed. And I think that'll be helpful for us as a board and as the committee and with the public to look at all of those in their totality, and then you can see, okay, this is changed, this has been taken out, this has been added to, and this is some of the background behind that. So I think staff's done a good job of giving us both versions there. But if we can, as a group, we'll start with chapter 11 on page 31.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
My question is this. I was looking through this, looking at the strike-through version. I see that, for example, on the beginning here, on page 31, chapter 11, we go down to design of new developments, and we see the first sentence has been struck through. All new developments shall be subject to the provisions of this chapter. And then there's underline. And what's the reason for the underline? Because I see that some sentences that are not underlined and some that are underlined are also included in the clean version.
The underlined text is the new suggested draft of the rewrite. The strike-through is the existing that they're suggesting would be...
Right, eliminated. The strike-through. But what about the sentences that are not underlined?
That's existing code that is not being changed.
Okay, so because they're included in the clean version.
That's right.
Okay, and I just was wondering...
No, good question. It's a good question. So everybody knows now where we are, how we're going to do it. I think what we'll do is we'll just go sentence by sentence, starting with section 1101, general provisions, 1101.01, purpose and intent. And that way we'll address each paragraph, and if anybody has any thoughts or comments, then we can discuss those. Yeah, I think it wouldn't hurt to put it up there if we've got it. And for those of you who want to see it, you know, from the public or whatever, I think that'd be great. And we'll try to do it point by point, and that way we don't jump ahead or get off track in terms of, you know, the sequencing. So let's give Irene a second to get it up on the screen, and then we'll dive into it.
Architectural standards. I picked up Collier County, Sarasota, City of Sarasota, Sarasota County, as three high-quality communities that have a considered nationally having a high quality of life. And then I came over to Northeast Florida along the coastal area and took like Melbourne, New Smyrna Beach, Port Orange, Daytona Beach, Ormond Beach, St. John's County, St. Augustine. And what I did was I took a generic piece of land on AutoCAD and I laid out what Palm Coast could produce right now for a retail building. And on the, so it's a rectangular shaped building, fronts on an arterial, and then on the right hand side of the building was, I believe, office, and on the left side was commercial, and behind it was multifamily, because those typically have different types of buffers. So I got what you typically might find, and so then the idea was to lay out site plans for each of these communities and see how much building you can get, because when I was a consultant for 18 years, I did that pretty frequently, and if the developer or the property owner that wants to develop a property for his own business, if you can't get a certain square footage on there, you can't pay as much for the land, or you need to go find a bigger parcel. So anyway, I went ahead and did this, and I tried to, I had some assumptions on each of these, so that, like, for instance, the site was already cleared, because different communities have tree preservation issues, and I tried to keep it simple so we could look at apples and apples as much as possible. And when I went through this, of the, about the 10 communities there, the average square footage that we were able to get was 11,835 square foot retail building, and that's in the second column from the left. Palm Coast brought up the rear on that, and it wasn't even close, 7,600. So if you looking at the other quality communities or the communities close by, if you're coming in to put a building here and you find out how little of a building you can get versus, let's say, Ormond Beach, and it might be serving the whole area, you may go down to Ormond Beach. So one of the things we were trying to do was keep the quality high, but make some changes to the standards so that we could have more efficient building layouts, which in turn lower the cost of services and products to the people living in the community or those who shop or need services here. And as we went through this, we, below that at the very bottom, with the changes we have made, we're now up there where we're still pretty conservative and we're not quite up to the average, but we've made a big jump. And I think one of the areas that you can, if you go over to the fourth column from the right, where it says total landscape area, square foot, and percent of site, the New Smyrna Beach has the highest standards. 32% of their site is going to be landscape area. And Palm Coast comes in second, which is 30%. And as we made these proposed changes, we have it at 28%, and we're still the, if you take out, we would still be the second highest of everybody out there. So I guess my point was, we still have very high standards, and we've, over the course of time here, about a year and a half ago, we had a public meeting on the same issue in December, back in the old building on Cypress Park. And people came up, and some people wanted stricter standards, did not want changes. Other people wanted more lenient standards, and one of the things we heard a lot about was we want increased maintenance requirements because some of the landscaping wasn't being maintained well.
Yeah, and I think what I emphasize too that's key is with that part and the groups that we were working with and a lot of the groups that we met with, is everyone gets Palm Coast standards, our brand. When you come off the interstate, you go, wow, you know, people love our landscape. Mm-hmm. People love to see our landscape. So the challenge for us and the challenge with that part when we were going through this was how do we maintain where you're not even going to notice, where you still have that beautiful Palm Coast. We get it. That's our brand. That's what makes us Palm Coast. And we want to try to keep that. And we tried real hard working together in this code to continue this, to have that wow factor and keep the beautiful landscape. So hopefully we accomplish it. But that was key for everybody.
I have a question, thank you, regarding that and the chart here. When you're talking about the retail building square feet, you're talking about extra, the height is maybe the difference in these structures rather than what the requirements are here in Palm Coast. Could that be correct? Like the number of stories that are allowed?
They're all one story.
All one story, yeah. Okay, and that's, thank you for that. This is the current standard in place right now. That's what this is based on, not anything changed here. Is that correct? That you made this from using what is in place now?
You can see the proposed on the bottom.
Right, okay. So we got existing is the second row up from the bottom, and proposed is the bottom one.
Okay.
Well, there are a few things in here that we also have been working on the transportation section of the code. It's probably a year out or something. But we've included some of the things that were on that in this. The only one I can think of is, and we pointed that out to the city council back in September, we require the loading space to be behind the building for aesthetics purposes. And we're the only community that requires that. But that's a good portion of the reason that the square footage is 7,600.
What stands out to me, and maybe you can explain this, is the third column from the right. Under the current standards, Palm Coast has the lowest planting costs of any of these communities. So the landscaping, the trees, the vegetation, everything that's in place right now, the regulations, we still end up being the lowest costing community. Is that correct?
There's several lower.
Yeah. Melbourne is the lowest.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
St. Augustine, St. John's.
So we're mid-range.
That's a good point, though. It's not the cost of the landscaping that's really the issue, and it's more the limitations it puts on the building in all the ways. So in other words, I think the bigger limiting factor is the percentage of the site that is used for landscaping or the perimeter buffers, for instance.
Mm-hmm. So well, thank you for that.
Okay, let's go ahead and jump in while they're trying to get this pulled up on the screen. We can at least get going, and that way we get moving here a little bit. So, if we look at the first paragraph, 11.01.01, purpose and intent, you'll see that the only changes to that initial paragraph was some additional language that's been added that you see underlined there. And you can see in parentheses at the bottom of that paragraph, it's additional details added. So you can look at that. If there's any comments, you know, let's talk about it. But otherwise, I think it's just adding some additional language in there that, you know, addresses purpose and intent. Comments, be good. Okay, the second one is the applicability, and again, it's relocating the word otherwise. It's the only change there. You see where it's been stricken and then it's moved on the backside of stated, unless stated otherwise in this chapter versus unless otherwise stated. Okay, paragraph A, You can see it's design of is the new language, new development. And you can see the language there is it's basically a brand new paragraph. Development shall be designed to the greatest extent possible to protect existing trees and their tree protection zones from stormwater facilities, drainage lines, utilities, grade changes, building footprints, parking areas, drives, and walkways. Subdivision plats shall shift plot lines to minimize placing specimen or minimize placing specimen or historic trees in the buildable area of the lot if practical. And you see that in the paragraph, it notes that the first sentence is not needed since this is in the LDC. Second sentence was moved from section 1102.04b1. So it's just a relocation of existing language that was in the code. It's not new language, it's just, okay, it was further back in the code. Everybody good on that? Okay, paragraph B, alteration of existing development. There's some flexibility language that was added. You can see that underlined there. It's talking about building or parking lots existing before this code, right? August 19, 2008, shall be required to be altered or removed in order to comply with this chapter, except that the following activities shall require compliance with this LDC. And then the new language you can see is underlined there. To the maximum extent possible, and then there's in parentheses, exceptions may be granted when conflicting with pedestrian and traffic safety, interfering with the protection of specimen or historic trees or natural resources, removing required parking or similar situations. Any comments?
One Bob? Question. Where it says exceptions may be granted, what's the mechanism for that? Is that the land development administrator, is that a variance before the planning board?
It would be the land use administrator.
Thank you. Okay.
And of course, if it was a tier two or a tier three site plan, that would come to planning board for approval.
Yeah. Anything else on that? Okay. Item one is no change. Item two, you can see there's some language that was...
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
The section just says that if you expand a building, the expansion must conform to the new plan. Is that right?
When an existing non-residential building is expanded, the required building foundation plantings and their planting area shall be provided for the new building area.
Right.
That's so. You've got an existing building. You expand it. The expansion has to be planted with the required foundation plantings. Did you have a comment?
Well, I think it's probably the same as Mr. Jones. I mean, I assume consideration was given there. If you do a 10% expansion to a giant building, you've got 10% of the building that looks like it's in Coral Gables, and you've got 90% of the building that looks like it's in, well, I won't name any names, but Marwood Cove. I'm not sure if that's a problem, but I noticed that as I was reading through it. I assumed that did we get any input from whoever about what that might look like in practice? But.
Yeah, I think, the discussion was, that when someone is expanding a small portion of a building, an addition, you take a large building and you think about the island requirements. So now they have an existing parking lot. So now we're going to go into their existing parking lot to make sure that they comply with the island requirements and the tree requirements. Now you're talking, you need to get all new irrigation. Basically, you are treating it like a brand new development. So from a money standpoint, from a reasonable standpoint, requiring a person to redo their whole site for an addition is, in my opinion, that's the intent.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you say required building foundation plan.
Right.
You're not talking about the whole
right.
facility. Okay, that makes sense.
To your comment, I agree with the idea. I agree it would be prohibitively expensive. But what I was really asking is, what's the aesthetic result of this? I mean, is the standard hypothetically so different new code, revised code, that you're going to look at the building and you're going to say, oh, there's the 80% that was built 20 years ago, and there's the 20% that just added?
Right. And I don't see. So
and
I don't, yeah, and I don't think so. I think you would have more of an issue with the architectural, because we have really high architectural requirements, and to make a building stucco and 90% of the building ends up going like a trailer sticking out of the side of the building, that would really show a discrepancy there. But as far as landscape, I think, you know, really how we've been practicing is, it's really a code issue too. You know, because a lot of times the plants, if they're old, they're not being maintained and that type of thing. And to make somebody redo all their plants around there, it's really not a land development code issue. It's really an enforcement and code enforcement issue if those plants and the irrigation isn't working. This isn't the mechanism to do code enforcement. I think that was really the intent.
Yeah, and in that case, you know, if I'm a property owner and I'm adding 10-20% onto the building, and unless I had no landscaping on the other side, I'm going to have landscaping there. That in that case, we would probably work with them to, you know, maybe not all those plants go here. Maybe we spread those out a little bit, or maybe the property owner is willing to go ahead and put some in front of the rest of the building. So.
And some of them too, like some of your like shopping centers, not the hard one is, but you know, a lot of times the old days, you didn't have foundation plantings. Take Island Walk, for example, redevelopment of that project, and it was an MPD, but you had a shopping center that had no foundation plantings, but you had a sidewalk in front of it, and it had somebody redo all their parking aisle, and now we're just talking foundation plantings. Now they're going to cut asphalt out. Now they're going to irrigate underneath the asphalt at the sidewalk just to have those foundation plantings. So we're saying, hey, for new stuff, you can do it infrastructure-wise. You're able to make sure you have those foundation plantings as required.
Anything else on that? Okay, item 3 was, as it exists in our current code, talks about shopping centers and the expansion of such, which is kind of what we just dealt with on the paragraph before. So we've now got that showing as a non-residential building, which a shopping center would qualify as. And what they've done now is, it looks like they've added a sentence dealing with parking and vehicular use areas that are expanded but not the building. So when a parking or a vehicular use area is expanded but not the building, it's kind of the same thing we just talked about for parking versus a building. The new pavement area is required to be brought into compliance with this chapter, and at a minimum, temporary irrigation shall be required. So if I get this right, it looks like the last sentence we talked about previously was building expansion. Now we're talking about parking lot vehicle use area expansion. And it's basically the same concept, it sounds like, that if you expand your parking lot, you have to add landscaping to only the new expanded area.
And to be quite frank, when existing buildings do expand their parking, it happens rare, and it doesn't happen very often. And typically, it's not a huge section. So if you have a small section, this, and then you got a whole parking lot, and having them come back and do islands and rearrange your whole parking, that's not the intent of what we're trying to do here.
Would an example of that be Starbucks?
No, Starbucks actually.
They're getting included in their parking area.
Yeah, I mean, if for when Island Walk expanded, they kept the islands for our code, and Starbucks does. They were under our code, I believe, in 2000. They might have been part of our code. So they would, if they expand their parking, they would have to meet the requirements of our code.
Anything else on that? Okay, the next one's talking about number four, any expansion project shall be required to replace previously planted required landscaping that has been damaged or has died. And I think, in the parentheses, you can see the emphasis that landscaping must be maintained if you want to expand. I think it's a mechanism, it sounds like to me, to people that have not maintained their property and allow things to die and not replace them, that if they're going to expand, then that's that they have to bring it back up to.
And that's what we've been practicing now, and all the owners have been really good about doing that. Again, that's more of a code enforcement if that doesn't work, but having in our code to let's have some living, and it goes with what Mr. Cubb was talking about, to have that consistency. You know, if you have half dead plants over here and you have green living plants over here on this section, it's not going to look too good. So
at the point of permit or request for a permit, those provisions have to be in place.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have identified what's dead and dying and what needs to be replaced at the point of permit, not throughout.
Right. If they're expanded and they have a permit inside with the city, and you have, a quarter of your property that you got new trees going in and are all living, and you have some issues over here, we really want it to look consistent. Mm-hmm. So it's a mechanism to, dead plants, to get them surviving, as your irrigation, get them consistent with the new portion of the building.
Right. So you only have one bite of that apple?
No,
what I'm saying.
Code enforcement, but if we do, we want to try to work with them, and there are issues, if there are, gives us an opportunity as we're reviewing a new plan, say, hey, looks like you have some issues on your irrigation because your plants obviously are dying, and get them back looking good again.
Okay, paragraphs 5 and 6 have now been, as you can see, they've now been moved into paragraph B3 above. That was the one dealing with the parking and vehicle use area expansion. So that's where those two have been consolidated and streamlined into B3. Any questions on that? Okay, 11.01.03 is the measurement of trees. That language stays intact other than they're clarifying what, in the second sentence there, what breast height is, and you can see it's 4'6" for DBH.
Why do we have to have the words taken at breast height then?
Because that's the technical term that they use in the landscape industry, diameter breast height. That's a technical term that's used industry-wide. So I think that's
what we're doing. Telling them it's going to be 4'6".
We're telling them that's what...
4 foot breast height is...
That's what DBH is going to be measured at, 4'6" above the ground.
Question. Continuing on that, after you talk about that, you say that a measurement of the diameter of the trunk at 6 inches above grade. What is grade? What are you talking about? What is grade?
Ground.
So it's not DBH.
Yeah, I think, is there something in there missing that it's not?
This is new planting.
It's not been left, it's been left out. Caliper, is that what's missing on that? You see what the question is talking about after the first sentence talks about existing trees shall be calculated by the measurement for the diameter of trunk and caliper inches taken at breast height. The size of new landscape trees, that's the difference. It's the new versus
the existing. The new trees will be measured 6 inches above the grade, the ground level,
right,
instead of the DBH?
Right. Right.
Hmm. Isn't it, would you clarify? That's probably our main personal
that's customary out in the market when you're purchasing trees, I mean, for wholesale.
Well, the DBH, that's a arborist term. I thought
right.
We actually got that.
That's how we're looking at it's existing that. Trees. But for new trees, they do measure much, much lower. And that's, we're not, I don't think, unusual there. I think that's pretty standard out there.
That was already in the code.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Right. That's not a change. That's right. Existing language.
And I was just wondering what you meant by above grade when you're speaking about DBH or above grade.
I think when a developer is required to put a new tree in, the city specifies the size of the tree.
Yeah, we'll say. Okay.
So a tree has to be 4 inches in diameter, and that's measured 6 inches above the grade because it's a new tree.
Right. That's correct.
That's correct. So what they're also, the DBH, is, I mean, what would be the measurement at the diameter of breast height of that same?
Probably be much less than 4 inches.
It would be much less, yeah.
So but it's a new tree.
A smaller tree, yeah. Okay. I was just wondering about that.
Okay, 11.0104 is classification of developments. And this section deals with the type of developments and how they're classified, and there's been some changes there to make it a little easier and a little more user-friendly for someone picking up our land development code. And you can see that instead of Class 1 and Class 2 and Class 3, which is how our existing code is, they're now classifying it as MFR, which is multifamily, and commercial. Is one category, new category, and that's townhouses, condominiums, multifamily residential development, and institutional office and commercial uses. And then there's a new category for industrial, and that's strictly industrial and warehousing development. And then there's a category for subdivisions, and that's any subdivision in a zoning district. And then the last one is a single family duplex classification.
Quick question, Brad. Where would you put self-storage facilities? Are you going to put those in B or A? Where would they
be? Self-storage would be under B.
B, yeah. Thanks.
I didn't hear the question or the answer for that.
The question was, where would a self-storage facility be classified? And the answer was it's going to be under the industrial class.
Okay. Where would an MPD go?
MPD will set their own... Basically, this is an issue that we have with existing code, okay? Because when you do an MPD, a master plan development, the development agreement spells out the different uses. So in the last code, we actually had an MPD. That was a very strict buffers and requirements of the MPD. But depending on what the MPD is, if you have an MPD of just single-family residential homes, it would fall under single family, it would fall under D, okay? And that portion of the MPD that has multifamily would fall under the A. Because you have different uses underneath the, you may have a multiple of different land use types within a master plan development.
Okay.
So that's how we would do it.
So give me an example of a sub D.
Subdivision.
Well, that'd be like, The single family project would initially be under the subdivision, and then for the individual lots, when they came in later, those standards for SFR and DPX, you would go to that, the builders.
Let me explain, because this was some confusion, and this is where we're trying to fix it also in our code, is that we are trying to distinguish between a subdivision and single family, okay? Think of it this way. When a new project comes in, let's say everyone may be familiar with going down Clubhouse Drive, you have that subdivision that's being developed now.
Country Club.
Country Club. Yeah. Let's take that for example. Yeah. Well, before Country Club is approved, they have to plat, and they have to submit for a master subdivision plan, a preliminary plat, and then a final plat. So we actually have specific requirements for a subdivision that comes in, like common area,
okay.
Those kind of requirements. Now, Mr. Jones purchased a house after the final plat's approved by city council. Then Mr. Jones comes in and purchases a house, the single family house. Then we have those requirements for single family for land.
Okay, so the subdeed kind of conforms to the common areas of the subdivision, but the individual owners would have to conform to the SFRD.
Exactly.
Okay.
Correct. And that's good to know, because you know later on when we start talking about street trees, you'll see, because we had some issues, and it's very important. I'm glad you asked that question, because distinguish the two, because we have, you know, Mr. Jones and Mr. Tyner, who's purchasing a house and comes in through a building permit, you know, and then we have a subdivision where, you know, a big developer is developing a lot, so we need to know that distinction.
So when you were talking about a planned development, but like this, like where we're at right now in the town center, when the town center was approved, its planned unit development or whatever it was called at that time frame, it established the standards that would be here, and they may not be the same as these.
That's
here.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else on classification? Okay, next one is that's a good idea. Okay, before we move into section 1102, do we have anybody, we have people from the public that wanted to comment on any of the stuff we've covered? We'll try to do that in sections so we don't get too far ahead of you, but if not, we'll move on. But,
would you have an extra set of handouts?
Yes, I think we do. Is there anyone else joining
the meeting?
Thank you.
We need one more.
Okay, 110201, or 1102, is tree preservation, protection, and replacement. And 01 is protected trees defined. And it looks like that language there is no change in that initial paragraph. Talks about trees being meet the following criteria of protection with the exception of invasive species. And then the little parentheses is diameter being measured at breast height was already explained in section 110103, so we are removing redundant text below and elsewhere as it's applicable. So now we're talking about existing trees, so that's why we're talking about diameter at breast height. So that's and why it's been removed. So number A there says that the trunk is 6 inches or greater. These are protected trees defined. That's A. B is trees 4 inches or greater if surveyed for credit. So if you want to use a 4-inch tree, you have to survey it and put it on your survey and use it for credit. C is specimen trees which are any protected species with a trunk of 24 inches or greater. And then the new language is except for pines. We don't allow pines to be a specimen tree. However, the following species are considered specimen trees when they reach one of the following. So this language is similar to what we had. You can see there's been a couple little tweaks. The 12 inches or greater, nothing changed there other than they just removed again that diameter at breast height. And bullet point two, we used to have 16 inches or greater, and it's now been bumped up, it looks like, to 18 inches or greater. Mm-hmm. And it looks like there's been one tree taken off of that list. There's still an elm, hickory, oak, green ash, sycamore, date, palm, and maple. And it appears the sweet gum has been removed from that list.
So we're making it easier to remove a tree.
Sweet gum.
No, from 16...
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And why is this the logic?
That was like what staff initially proposed was 18 inches for it to go up in the initial draft. Mm-hmm.
So why did it change?
It got changed sometime in there, and we actually got these
trees are in increments of six, and so you got 12 inches, which is 2 times 6. Then if you go to 18, it'd be 3 times 6, and then it goes up to 36 inches, which is the most protected type tree, and that's 36 inches. So it seems like it moves a little bit smoother that way.
Only if you can't measure. You know what I mean? I mean, 16 or 18, who cares if it's 3, 6, 9, 12, 14, whatever. Yeah, well, but anyone can measure 16 or 18. It's not a mathematical puzzle that makes it so complicated. That's my point. So I like the 16 because it's more restrictive.
Any other comments on the 16 versus the 18?
I agree with Glenn that the 16 I would like to see keep more of a trees rather than up in the number that, or the height that will be protected above. And why is sweet gum removed from the list? It's a hardwood species that it's pretty abundant here. It's a native plant. It grows very well.
We discussed that with FCAR. Some of the comments that came forward were the roots tend to be at the surface a lot, which create tripping hazards. There were some other issues that came up with sweet gum, and it's like, well, why is sweet gum, it's not quite as high quality of tree as the other one, so that's why it was taken.
I don't care. I mean, a 24-inch sweet gum is still a specimen tree, it's just not getting that additional level of 16 or 18 inches, is the way I take it.
I agree with Oyan, I have a sweet gum growing in my yard that's a large sweet gum, it would be in the specimen category. And the roots are at the surface, and it's very difficult to mow around, and tripping would be that's a good idea.
Glenn, the reason you said you removed the sweet gum was because of the roots, a tripping hazard?
That was one of the reasons.
One of the reasons? I'll tell you one thing, a live oak should be removed then. Because all their roots are on the top of the ground. They grow roots on the top of the ground. I just had to have them removed because it's tearing the foundation up. So, I mean,
I think we would be hard pressed.
We're looking here. I don't think you could use the termination because of the roots becoming a trip hazard. I know the roots are above the ground. Sycamores, basically the same thing.
I think that's just a couple comments. I'm not sure. I don't know.
6, 12, 18 has a nice rhythm to it.
Anybody else have any thoughts on the 16 versus 18?
Well, 2 inches isn't going to make a whole lot of difference.
Then we should go to 22 or something. You know what I mean? 18, 20, 22. Who cares? 16 looks good. That's my final comment.
6, 12, 18 is good. Yeah? 6, 12, 18 is good.
So then I got a next opinion on it.
I don't know that I quite understand this argument.
You don't understand what?
The 16, 18.
Well, the existing code is 16 inches.
Right, but maybe Mr. Bartlow could restate his...
My objection is that who cares what the previous numbers are that flow to 18 mathematically?
It's raised to 18.
Raised to 18. So that you want to, because it sounds better, flows mathematically, I think that's a poor argument for saving a tree.
No. I thought you said it made it easier.
Makes it
two.
I didn't say it makes it easier.
If the tree is 17 inches, it's not protected.
Right.
And
isn't that your point that it makes it easier to get rid of?
It makes it.
Or to eliminate some?
When it's 18, it makes it easier to eliminate a tree that's 16 or 17.
Right.
But yeah. 16 is a nice number. Why not? That's the code now. So that what you're saying is that, oh, I have a 16-inch tree on my property. I can cut it because it's not big enough. It's not 18. But 16 is a good size number to keep.
We're not saying that was the only reason that it flowed through. Unfortunately, Bill could be here today. This is some memory stuff.
Why don't we have him comment?
But he can do that. But that was the original. That's what he told us with original intent. Sure. Just to make it 18. Doesn't know how it got switched to 16.
Okay.
Tell us about him.
Okay.
Sure. Take a look and see if he has.
And if he likes the 18 on the perfect.
I don't see it. Well, Bill actually supported the 18. When I talked to him, what if I told him next to
him? Okay, anything else on that? I'm going to leave. Well, yeah. Yeah, that out pretty good. D, historic trees which are specimen trees. It's just a little cleaning up of the language.
Oh, yeah. The protected specimens
which are any specimen trees.
For the 36 inches. Should be a diameter.
Or larger.
That's a historic tree, not a, in addition to being a specimen tree.
That's correct.
Yeah, but you should put the word diameter.
I think what they've taken that out of all this right now. Because they've previously mentioned that here's how we're defining the measurement, you know. Okay. Right. I don't see the diameter on any of those.
Back in 1101-03, the purpose of this chapter, the size of existing trees.
Measurement of the diameter of the trunk and caliper inches. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, they're trying to clean up all of that.
Okay.
That way they don't have to keep repeating themselves.
Yeah. E is some language for single family. As you can see, it's for single family duplex development. Any tree 1.5 to 6 inches that was planted to meet the minimum tree density requirements, or an existing tree that was previously credited towards meeting the requirements of this chapter.
So which is this 1.5 to 6? Is that above grade? That's a new tree, so that would be above grade.
No, it's not. It's at breast height.
That was planted, okay.
Yeah, it was planted to meet the requirements, and now the homeowner, 10, 15 years later, wants to take it down. And the answer is you can, but you're going to have to mitigate that.
You can see in parentheses it talks about homeowners who want to remove trees that were planted to meet minimum requirements. And they're trying to protect those trees. Okay. Anything else on that?
Who does the mitigation?
Property owner.
Yeah, property owner.
Whoever
wants to take it out.
Person with the axe.
They ask you to get a permit to remove a tree, but they don't come inspect to see if you removed it, or if you remove 16 other ones. So who would they mitigate to?
We have an urban forester who handles all the family development, and they come in with a permit.
Okay, the next section is tree survey requirements. It's talking about what you have to do to locate the trees. And paragraph A is tree survey, and I guess it looks like the only language is striking the word current and using accomplished within the last 24 months. That the survey shall be accomplished within the last 24 months and shall identify all protected trees by species name and size.
Mr. Chairman, you need to close the parentheses somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know why the parentheses is there.
Well, was the existing one, and they eliminated it. There wasn't a closed parenthesis.
Yeah,
it's struck. It's struck.
Oh, okay. The open parenthesis is struck.
Yeah, it's struck.
It was just a typo of previous. Yeah.
No, we're going to hold it to the program.
Oh, yeah, we're still on the same section. Okay, so monument signs is B.
No change there, right? What is the parentheses?
No, no, this is already taken care of.
At the work existing, yeah.
Right, so that's the reason we have it.
Okay. Okay, paragraph C, protected specimen and historic trees. Now it's going by the classifications that we previously developed. And you see the new classifications, multifamily, commercial, and industrial developments. And it's going to talk about the specimen and historic trees. So you can see in sub-paragraph A, the tree survey shall show all protected trees 6 inches and greater from the property lines to 5 feet past the required buffer area width, except as provided in section 11.02.02d. And then new language, protected trees within any adjacent rights of way extending to the nearest street pavement shall be included in the survey. I think they're just trying to clarify that language. Is that right, Bill? That's what they're
doing. Yeah, I don't think there's much change here.
Yeah. Okay, so subparagraph B, again, it just adds the new language except as provided in section 11.02.02d, which we'll get to in a minute. Paragraph 2 is subdivision developments. You can read that, all specimen and historic trees is the new language, and then again, the except as provided in section 11.02.02d. Same language there. And if we go to paragraph 3, we're down to single family duplex developments. Again, it's just cleaning up the and removal of the diameter breast height and referencing the except as provided in section 11.02.02d. Which is now this next section, D, which is survey of individual trees not required. And so you can see that's dealing with individual trees that don't have to be surveyed. And it's talking about the land use administrator may determine that a survey identifying each individual protected tree is not warranted and can account of all protected trees, including species and diameter sizes acceptable. And then it goes and gives us those three conditions. When existing vegetated areas are remained undisturbed, there's no change there. Bullet point 2, there's no change there. And then bullet point 3, there's a change there. The trees are located in wetland preservation or conservation areas that will not be impacted.
Quick question. What about if somebody is doing some form of wetland mitigation?
Now, if they want to use them for credit, they want a survey. But if they're going to be protected, it's conservation.
No, let's say it's class 2 wetlands and plan to mitigate it so I can develop it.
Yeah. And you're going to impact it.
Yeah.
So
it's going to take it.
No. Mitigation is, that is, St. John's River ordinance. The city, we have no jurisdiction of mitigation. I don't interfere with what St. John's Water Management District or the Oregon Corps of Engineers. If you're mitigating a specific site, we honor what that mitigation is. Absolutely.
Yeah, but if you're impacting a wetland and you have historic trees, you have to account
right.
for those. If you're impacting it.
If you're impacting it. But it's
so what you're saying is, site,
what I'm saying
planting
is,
trees.
Yeah. Let's say it's a 10-acre site and I got 2 acres
of wetlands.
That I want to mitigate.
That you want to impact.
Get my permit.
That you want to impact. You're using the wrong word. You want to impact the wetland. which is then going to require
purchase credits from somewhere else.
Which is then going to require purchasing mitigation credits. But if you're impacting that wetland and it has a specimen of historic trees, you have to account for those in your development. You have to deal with those, you know.
Right. What number three is really doing there is where you got a big site, maybe there's a big chunk of it, it's in conservation. And let's say you got a 20-acre site and 10 acres, there's just tons of wetland trees out there. If you're not impacting that, why survey all those trees? So we're basically, why spend the money when it's not?
I understand that. It's a use a little bit for an alternate use and how it might be. And it's a fence. That's all. Just because that does come up fairly regularly.
Okay, anything on that? Everybody clear on that? Okay,
well, can I ask you a question? Yeah. Tell me what this 6-inch is. Is that the measurement above grade?
That's on an existing tree that is DBH, which is diameter at rest height, which is that definition there.
I just want to know where the 6 inches is coming from.
It's a 6-inch diameter measured at 4'6" above grade on an existing tree.
That's a protected tree.
What?
Glenn, there's a tool that they're using like this. The caliper prints it has to say like 4 or 6 inches. And then that tells them that instrument that they need to go at like 4'6" above grade. Then they use the caliper to measure what that diameter of that tree is.
Okay. 110203 is tree preservation. Paragraph A, specimen historic tree preservation requirements. Really, the only thing was that one word added at the very bottom of all reasonable efforts to shift or flip the building district cannot save the trees. Who's the land use administrator?
Depends on
the size of the project.
Right, so typically it's Mr. Tyner that's set.
But if it's a big enough project, it could go to the city manager.
That's correct. So it's like we got three tiers. So tier one is up to 40 single family or residential units or 40,000 square feet. Once you hit 40,000 square feet, it goes to the planning board. And then once you hit 100 units for residential units, or 100,000 square feet, it also has to go to the city council after it goes to the planning board.
Okay, anything on that? Okay, then it references table 11.1. And that table shows the minimum percentage of specimen and historic trees that shall be preserved on the site. So you can see the changes there. There's the categories of the multifamily, the commercial, and the subdivision is the one category. And then there's now an industrial category that's been added. And you can see the minimum percentage of trees that must be preserved of specimen of historic trees based upon the number of trees per acre, number of historic or specimen trees. And the percentages have been tweaked a little bit and created new percentages on that new industrial category.
Typically, more communities are more lenient on industrial because they're putting up a big square building and you can't move it around as much as you can on, let's say, an office or commercial.
Now, is this these numbers, the percentages, do they include trees that are partially on the site? Is that why? Because like you have less than 3 per acre, say. Okay, well, less than 3 says there may be 1 or 2. what's 75% of one or two? It's like one and three quarter tree.
Well, then, let's say you got a 4 acre site, and if you had 12 trees, you would fall down to the road next to it because you have three per acre. So you have to multiply it by the acres too. And then it gets rounded to the nearest whole number.
Okay, any questions on that? Right here, okay. Paragraph B is tree preservation credits. You can see that number one, there's no change in that. Number two is talking, there's some change there. You can see it's talking about a stormwater retention detention area may be credited toward meeting the tree density requirement, provided the area contains tree species that will survive periodic flooding.
Mangroves.
Okay, number three, they're just eliminating the word may only and inserting the word shall, talking about preserved palm trees. Number four is dealing with existing pine trees other than a sand pine and talking about that they can be used for buffer shade tree credits if they're 6 inches. And they can only comprise 50% of the buffer tree requirement. That language hasn't changed. The next sentence, if pines meeting these criteria are of good quality and spacing such that planting a new shade tree for some or all of the remaining required buffer shade trees is impractical, then existing pines may count for more than 50% maximum requirement. Okay. 110204 is tree protection measures. Talking about canopy roads, specimen, historic tree protection. This is where we talk about certain roadways within the city and identifying those roadways that have an extra level of significance and protection because of the tree canopy that are on the roads. And it looks like here that what we've changed here is we've specified a segment of Colbert Lane versus all of Colbert Lane. So from the south right-of-way line of Palm Coast Parkway, southeast to 2,200 feet south. So in other words, that's that section from Palm Coast Parkway to where, about where...
South edge of the college property.
Yeah.
And right there's college.
Sure. Yeah, where there's still canopy.
The trees just sort of disappear up.
And that is something that, I mean, when we were working with the FR group and our stakeholders, is we need to protect these other trees and put a higher level of protection of what we currently have. So this is what the intent of this is, to keep our canopy, because we did have development prices. Long story short, the Publix was... If we didn't have a partner and to do Island Walk and redevelop that whole area, you know, Publix at one point was looking on the other side of the road where our canopy was. So us able to work at Island Walk and redevelop that project, and we believe that, you know, our community loves those oak trees. So this is what we have to have.
So you'll see that's specifying that section of Colbert Lane. Then they've taken out Old Kings Road because there's really no canopy there along Old Kings Road. Mm-hmm. And then they've left Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway. So no changes there. So I think they're just taking out Old Kings Road, which is really a significant change. Okay, then the language on that second paragraph talks about roadway projects. That's if you're doing a roadway project modification to these roadways, which are the ones we just referenced above. Necessitated by development shall preserve and protect any specimen or historic tree within the right-of-way and within 35 feet of the right-of-way line along, again,
and Palm Coast Parkway, east of I-95, and this is new language, and along Palm Harbor Parkway, south of Hammond Dunes Bridge, and within 25 feet along the remaining designated roadways and roadway segments. Where this requirement is 35 feet, the applicant may meet this requirement by utilizing an average protected width of 35 and a minimum width of 25. Within these protected tree areas, the specimen or tree shall not be removed except the minimal number necessary to allow for site access, sidewalks, necessary utilities, and signage. And it looks like that language, you can see in parentheses, they added that language to give a little more flexibility. I think that's what could give you the ability to do some averaging, you know, where you could do an average of 35 or a minimum of 25.
So on one piece of property, they may have some the area where it's 25 and some where it's 35?
These are all roadway projects in the right of it.
As long as that averages out? Is that what that sentence is saying?
Yep. You can utilize an average of 35 with a minimum of 25. So, you know, you could go up to 45 in one area and down to, you know, 28 in another area. Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. Bullet point one, no change. Bullet point two, no change. Number three, no change. Number four talks about where there's no practical alternative for preservation, when that's not possible, such as traffic safety conflicts. In other words, a safety conflict. The total diameter of the protected tree being removed shall be replaced with replacement trees having no less than 4 inches of caliber versus the 6 inches as it's currently written.
And, you know, our arborist, Carol, we talk about this, and a lot of times she will tell you, the arborist will tell you, that having a 6 to a 4, the smaller diameter trees, they're going to grow, okay? But the smaller diameter trees, such as a 4-inch, does a little bit better acclimating to a new area. Where I learned.
Yes.
So, you know, having a 4 from 6 and it's going to grow, so she was comfortable of having a 4-inch leaf product, it would do better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Paragraph C. Actually, that should be B, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that should be B. I mean, it says C on ours, but just as a note, it should be B. But anyway, it's taking that out. It's moving that to section 110102.A, which we've already looked at.
Oh, I think there's a little part down here.
Yeah,
there's part of
C2.2.
B2 is still...
Yeah, I'm talking about B1.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
B1 is what you're moving.
It's labeled C, it should be B.
Yeah, we've already done it, yeah.
And the B would be, the only thing in B now would be what's on the next page.
Yeah, so that'll be B1. So we're looking on the next page, or 2, okay. That's not going to be 1, and the language doesn't change, it's going to just be renumbered. And the same thing with C, which is tree protection during construction, 1 and 2, nothing changed. That brings us to tree removal, which is 0205, and prohibitions. And it looks like in 1.1, let's see, cut down, remove, damage, or destroy infrastructure, defined in section 110201. And it just refers to section 110206 for replacement standards. So there's standards that we're going to see here in a couple of minutes that it's referring us to. And it says specify that replacement is required to assist code enforcement. Item 2, see here, talks about committing the echo business.
What is
the same thing there, yeah, refer, I'm sorry, go ahead.
What is NSI A300?
government standard.
It's a government standard.
American National Standards Institute.
These are arborists.
The nurseries.
For arborists, Nancy Sanders, that's what they go, there's a study that they use.
All right. So two talks about just mitigating the protected specimen or historic trees that are going to be removed, and refers to the section. Three, no change. Four, no change. Paragraph B is land clearing. Added the word stormwater facilities. And then nothing for the rest of that paragraph, nothing in one. And then in paragraph two, let's see what we've got there. Replacement of these trees may be allowed in common areas. Okay, so the paragraph says, if the trees are being allowed to be removed since they cannot be saved due to the large amount of fill added as described in B, above, then why go to the expense of surveying them? Okay, so if you go back to B in that first paragraph, it talks about, however, in order to accommodate development within a subdivision where fill is required to such a depth that it would preclude the survival of existing trees, lots may also be cleared, provided, and then it's giving us the points that allows you to clear those as long as you do a clearing and grading plan. And then this second point that they're going to eliminate was talking about surveying all of the trees, and I guess they're saying there's no need to do that if they're going to be eliminated. Makes sense, I guess. Paragraph C then goes to tree removal activities exempt from, they just changed the capitalization there. And then the paragraph says the following activity shall be lawful without the application or issuance of a tree permit, and then new language, and do not require tree replacement. So we're talking about tree removal activities that are exempt from needing a permit. Number one doesn't change. Number two adds two words, in or about. Number three talks about single family and duplex zone platted lots, removal or effective removal of trees by a utility company. So read the little paragraph, the parentheses there, because it says staff wants removal of trees in the first sentence to not require a permit, as owners have used this as a loophole.
I can tell you some real life examples. Okay. I'm a landowner. I own a house, and Florida Power and Light, they need to have their clearance for power lines. It's a health and safety issue. Sure. So Florida Power and Light, typically what they do is, they'll knock on the door of the neighbor, typically, to get that tree. It could be my favorite oak tree. I have no right as a homeowner to say, no, FPL, you're not taking this tree out. Well, they have to. Okay, by law, they have to. So why, the idea is, the idea is not to penalize a homeowner and have the homeowner get a permit for a tree that has to be taken out by FPL, and then on top of that, have them mitigate
it. Have them replace it.
So this is what this one's about, is if you have to for health and safety purposes, why are you going to punish a homeowner who could be their favorite tree and now they have to mitigate? Most likely, on their own, if they're taking out their favorite tree, they may go and buy some more land or some trees to replace it. But that's what that one's about. Change.
Mm-hmm. Good with that?
So if you own the property, utilities can go in your property, whether you want them or not.
Well, you have to deal with it. Yeah.
FPL, if it's a line, they have a right to go in and remove a tree that could be hitting the exact line.
Not if they're installing new lines. So.
Well, they're installing new lines. They you know, I don't know 100% on it, but what I'm talking about is they have to maintain
it. The city build them right away, right?
A lot of them have their own reason, too. FPL only have their own reason.
Yeah, they don't have their own reason.
There is some notification you send out. Before you access or initiate the easement, there's some notification.
Yeah, typically, my talking about FPL is that they notify the owners. If it's commercial property, they'll notify them, say, hey, we need to get rid of this vegetation because what happens. I mean, the laws have really changed over the years because I remember at North, they were FPL, they had their own arborists on staff. And they were telling me stories about these trees hitting a line, shorting out, and it goes to another bank of lines, and it totally wipes out the whole city. I mean, it's the potential. I mean, they made some changes. I'm exaggerating now, but that has happened in the past. But this is what this is about.
So then when these are removed by the utility company, the homeowner is not responsible for replacing that tree to meet the required number of trees that they need on the lot.
That's what we're proposing, yes.
Okay. Number four is no change. Number five is new language in this location, but it was previous language that was moved from 110205.E.9. It's talking about trees located in the city drainage easement. So, and those are... Okay, paragraph D is permit requirements. Now we're talking about permits required for land clearing and filling. We're talking about prohibiting unlawful clear trees, fill land, excavate or dredge any partial land prior to the issuance of a single family building permit, or there's a new language of site development permit. So it's differentiating between a single family home and a site development permit, which would be for a commercial, multi-family, whatever. Unless otherwise stated in this LDC, and we already talked about it. The building permit shall act as the tree removal permit, except for single-family lots. A site development permit is a better term rather than a development permit. So that's why we changed it to a site development permit. Paragraph A, vacant properties, no change there other than referring to section 4.0. Paragraph B, vacant properties may be partially cleared for the purpose of removal of unsuitable debris or muck within the buildable area of a site. And it's referring to Chapter 9 for permitting requirements. We're just cleaning that up. There are more requirements in Chapter 9 than just right-of-way access. C talks about vacant single-family residential properties, which is the new language, versus all residential properties. And so under C, we go to E being
done. Yeah, it's now D2.
Now it's C2.
D2.
Where am I missing D?
Previous page.
Oh, I got you. Thank you. Yep, D2. Okay. So that's talking about prior removal of any protected tree. An application for tree removal shall be submitted to the city. Again, it's talking about, instead of saying development order, but changing it to site development permit, since that's a better term. A separate permit need not be obtained, but treatment removal shall be addressed during the development order review process. And then new language, the following types of tree removals require a permit, but mitigation is not required. And there's two new paragraphs there. Trees within clusters, if there is a need to relieve thinning or overcrowding of trees as part of an approved fire mitigation plan. That's language that was moved from a previous section. And so is this next paragraph. It's not necessarily new language, and it's just been moved, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the same language, it's just been relocated. Then E is removal of protected trees. Let's see here what we have. Protected trees removal require replacement. And it references the section. Tree was originally preserved according to the previous chapter. Or, this is new language, or the tree removal would cause the property to no longer meet the minimum tree density standards outlined in section 1103. Upon receipt of a completed application, or the, again, new language or land use to administer. You can see why they've added that language in the parentheses there. They talk about to add clarity and then add land use administrator as being added in the different city as a landscape architect available but not a certified tree arborist. Paragraph 1 is just adding that language of the land use administrator. 2 doesn't change. 3 doesn't change. 4 is talking about a pine tree within 30 feet of a structure or within a distance from a structure less than the tree's height may be removed as a safety precaution. Providing the property owner where the tree is located is agreeable to the removal and applies for the permit.
I don't understand that last thing. Thank you for the solution. The tree is located all the same.
We have somewhere in the, let's say you've got a pine tree that maybe it's not real healthy or whatever, but it's on the neighbor's property. And it's maybe you're concerned that it's going to come over during a storm and fall on the house. So then if you can get the neighbor to sign, then you would pay to get that tree taken out.
And if it's deemed a hazard? Still
requires
a criteria that's deemed a hazard?
Yep, it's on the neighbor's property. See, normally you can't apply for a permit, so this makes it a lot easier to apply for a permit if you just get the neighbor's signature on it. But the neighbors, what they're going to say is, well, I don't want to apply for the permit because then I don't want to make sure I don't have any liability on taking this down for that cost. So transfer the cost of it to the person that wants it taken down.
To the neighbor.
I understand that, but I'm saying if it's judged by the arborist that the tree poses a hazard to private property, the homeowner is still then required to...
Yeah, because it's not on his property. So you can't take somebody else's tree down that's on somebody else's property without their permission.
And in the area where there are trees that are along with the natural tree line, but within the distance to a home, but it's actually like on the soil, it's not on your property line, can you then, are you then not allowed to call and say, well, these trees are not on my property, but they're adjacent to my property. They're actually on the, you know, front of the soil. And if they propose a hazard,
We're saying that if you have a tree, pine tree within 30 feet of the structure, what we're saying is this is from your home and that it's adjacent to your lot. Because if we do get a lot of calls, like, you know, I want this is 30 feet from my house and a pine tree, and you're nervous about a pine tree falling on our house. We're saying if you get the permission of that property owner, yeah.
And if the property owner is the city of Palm Coast?
Well,
that is my question.
If the property owner is the city of Palm Coast, we'll have our arborist look at it and see if it's a hazard tree. On a case by case basis for us.
Well,
the city might take it out. In other words, if there's a tree on the city's property that's endangering neighbor house, you could call in to the city, you know, and send the arborist out, and I would expect the city would typically remove it.
I don't see language here that reflects that.
The city's going to pay for knocking down those pine trees?
No, no, if we had a hazard pine tree.
Yeah, because
if you have loggers going out there, we actually have a hazard and it's on city property, and we're aware that it's a hazard to the neighbor, yeah.
That's a liability of the city.
Well, our property.
We'll take it down.
If there's a green belt or a conservation area in the back of your property that's wooded, mm-hmm. heavily wooded, it's got a mix of pine trees and oaks, and a whole mix of, you're saying that the tree has to be declared a hazard
by our arborist, yes.
If it's on the city property.
Yeah, on the
if
city
it's on property. Private property, you're going to have to get that owner to agree.
Well, that's clear.
That's clear, but the conservation area property, the tree has to be declared a hazard.
Right.
I mean, if it's just it's a beautiful pine tree, if it's a
right.
spruce pine that is in wonderful condition,
right.
not dead with limbs falling off, that type of thing,
yeah,
that tree is not a hazard.
Right, exactly. Our arborist, Carol, I would doubt if it's a healthy tree, it's not coming down.
Okay.
Also,
typically, your conservation easement and those types of things, you have a big buffer from your single family. You know,
yes.
property on those cases, but what we're talking about here primarily is your neighbor to neighbor, the pine forest of your neighbor.
What I don't see here is the liability or the instruction where the city owns the city owned property of trees.
Well, that's still
that process
it's the city's a property owner.
We're
it's adjacent.
It's
the same process.
Yeah.
They're the property owner.
Okay.
And if they're further away than 30, it's still at rest here. If the tree is 150 feet high
mm-hmm.
and can fall on your property, that's a hazard. It wouldn't have to be just 30.
You're in the wrong state. It'd have to be in California to be 150
no,
feet high.
Well, there's some... I don't know. I haven't measured the trees nearby, but they're certainly higher than 30 feet.
Here's John.
What happens if they're... property next to you is owned by somebody that lives in Africa. They bought it off a computer. It's their property, they're in Palm Coast. But who knows who even they are?
You know, I don't know. That's a code enforcement. Like I said, Barbara Grossman and the urban forests handled a single family. And I know that there are certain circumstances. I mean, if it is a health and safety hazard, the owner can't be reached, and we have to take care of business. I'm sure there are some legal mechanisms. I don't know the details, but it can be done from a legal standpoint, because they're not going to jeopardize the health and safety of the owner. We can't.
But then you do the same thing with the 30-foot buffer from a property or the house. Your neighbor, say, an adjacent vacant lot where you had the rule that for a fire hazard, all vegetation had to be cleared?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Sides.
Yeah, and for fire-wise, and when, code handles the fire-wise and the requirements for fire protection in the buffer, yeah, code actually has gone out and has done it, and they didn't comply because the health and safety standards and not paying that fee, and then that goes a lien on that property.
Yeah, I was going to say, they put a lien on the property.
Same scenario. Yeah.
Section 8?
It's the same thing when they don't cut grass. It's the same thing when they don't cut grass. The city will go and cut it and build for it.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, so that was 4. We got 5. Just adding some additional language, parking lots, water, or sewer lines. Let's talk about trees that are causing structural damage. 6 is already in section 1102.05(c)(4). 7 has been moved. 8 has been moved. And 9 has been moved. Which now brings us to F, tree removal on developed residential lots. And so we're talking about lots of a single family, duplex, or estate. And no changes until we get to 2A. And a specimen tree, a talks about mitigating for specimen or historic trees, and it gives you the requirements. One shade tree per table, 11.3. Is that actually, is it 11.2? Is it to this table here, 11.2? Or is it really not?
I think it's just labeled as
change. No, there's 11.2.
Right. Yeah, but it says 11.3.
Yeah, but no, there's 11.3. The rest of it, there it is. It's way back. It's way back on page 948.
So we tried to put all the sizes in this table because some places they were issuing conflicting stuff. So we tried to, you know, unless it was something unique like the historic trees that were in the previous section. That was Bill Butler's suggestion that when it's a historic tree, let's have them put two trees to replace it because we're trying to really save the historic trees.
Yeah, so you got the specimen tree requirement of one shade tree per that table, and then you've got the historic tree, which that Bill just mentioned, two trees meeting the standards of table 11.3. With at least one being a shade tree. So if you look under at table 3 that's up there, if you look under the single family duplex category, you can see the changes. They took out the height requirement.
That was Bill Waller's suggestion that there was no need to include the height because the freezer being sold and purchased and categorized pretty much by the caliper.
By the caliper, yeah. So the shade trees stay at 2 inch. The understory trees drops from 1.5 inch to 1 inch. No more height requirements. And the container size goes down from 30 gallon to 15 gallon.
Excellent ideas.
Okay.
It was pretty big.
That's why I'm happy it's 15.
And those are for residential lots. Then we go to G, and we talk about tree thinning on, this is tree thinning, on multifamily, commercial, and industrial developments. Now, this is all new language here, and it's talking about projects that have landscaping where they've been planted for a minimum of 10 years, or where the property owner has retained or planted more trees than required by this chapter, and meets all the standards of this chapter. Tree thinning of overcrowded trees may be requested by the property owner upon submittal of a report by a certified arborist to the land use administrator. After review, the LUA, land use administrator, may approve or conditionally approve a thinning of the overcrowded trees when the intent of the original landscape plan and this chapter would still be met by the removal of such trees under one of the following conditions. Required trees, number one, required trees have matured to grow to such a size and density that tree thinning would be the most prudent methodology for maintaining the health and vibrancy of trees. And number two, trees in excess of the required minimum have matured to grow to such a size and density that tree thinning would only have an insignificant impact on the overall landscaping of the site.
I want to, for this one, give you some background. This is the one where, when we started land development code in 2008, we have some of the development projects that have actually planted trees. What our arborists and what we're finding, both John and Carol are agreeing that placement too close together. And the oaks aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. The development community is getting upset because they're growing, they're blocking views. So the idea is, with a certified arborist that we will be able to thin those out to make sure that those oaks aren't competing with each other and that these oaks can actually grow and have a great, beautiful canopy. So that's the intent of this. And then you'll see later on some of the tree placement requirements on buffer areas when we get into that later.
you'll see how that's reflected too. Instead of requiring, I mean, this up 5 feet apart, you've got some larger distances that our arborists believe that the health of that tree will survive to do what that oak tree is supposed to do. So that's the intent of this.
Yeah, I think the key that I see is it requires you to engage the services of an arborist if you want to exercise this option. So it's not like, you know, Joe Smith can just say, hey, I want to fit on my trees, you know. You've got to go through the process of getting a certified arborist. So. Okay, anything else on that? H is requirements suspended, and this is during a declared emergency. The land use administrator may suspend the requirements of this subsection, period. Nothing, you know, hurricane or, you know, some hurricane. You know, we don't have too many earthquakes. Yeah. 110206 is tree mitigation standards versus tree replacement. Just a change of the word, and you can see that they changed out the word replacement in that paragraph a couple times. And we are talking about the new categories of multifamily, commercial, and industrial. And you can see then the table now talks about for those categories, it's no longer in a single family duplex estate, it's just for this new chart 11.2 is just for multifamily, commercial, and industrial. And some changing of the caliper sizes. The height has been removed, like on the other chart. What else? That's pretty much it. We'll just change them. That middle column there.
It's a new term, 3 inches.
What about 3 inches?
So if we took out a 24-inch, then we get to replace it. 24 inches of new tree.
You mean the total number of inches
Yes.
is 24?
Yeah, it's 100%.
So if the total number of inches is 24, then in this case, in a specimen tree, it's 70% of the 3 inches can be removed.
Right, so it was 24 times 0.7. I think that's around like 17.
17, yeah, I was going to say. I'll go with that.
So you have to do, you know,
so you could
four or five trees there anyway. And this is the small size that you can use.
Okay.
And it was decreased. That was one that when we were working with Carr you know, basically, it will save some cost going from 4.5 inches to 3 without a doubt, going from 3.5 to 2.5 without a doubt. So, lessening the caliper will save some cost, but the real point is their trees are going to grow. We want to make sure they're planted right and all those standards are in place, and you know, the trees will grow. So, that was kind of the idea. Lessening the caliber size of the existing trees. So,
right. Under the historic tree column, most places I thought it was sale a little earlier, they built the caliber because that pretty much sets the height. Yeah. Why, in this particular instance, is there also a height requirement?
I think it was a little Bloomberg suggested on this.
I mean, just consistent.
So consistent, and then it's height of applicable.
Yeah.
Primary focus is on the caliper.
Well, yeah, that's why, as I said, are there some kinds of 3.5-inch caliper trees that are important?
I think where Bill was heading on this, or on some of these, and I think we'll see it probably in the next week or two, but the developers on commercial properties like to use the type of trees that aren't that tall, then they tend to come in and keep trimming the tops. And so this way, we get the 14 foot. We want to make sure we're getting 14 foot here.
I'll ask Bill, because I had told Bill, you know, he felt bad for not able to come tonight, and I said, don't worry, there's going to be questions tonight. I'm going to make sure I circle him, and when he does come, to address some of these comments. But what I do remember is the 3.5 caliber, and when we talked about 4 before, the 3.5 was Carol 100%, because that was, again, she would much rather have a small caliber size. The new small caliber size, because they do much better on a new site and adapt better than the larger caliber size boats. So sort of trees.
Okay, good. Anything else on the chart? It's been, obviously it's changed because it's the less information in this. Okay, 110207 is tree bank fund established, and it really just added a couple of words on paragraph B. Everything else stays intact. And that then brings us to the end of this section. And do we have any body of the public that wants to comment on that? That was a fairly long section that we covered on this one. We just finished 1102, but that entire section that we just finished.
I did talk about the smaller caliber.
Yeah, it talks about everything we just covered from age,
really on this one. And Andy and I were just kind of laughing and commenting. We've gone through over 10 pages in this one section. Our group met every week for 3 hours, and sometimes we made it 2 or 3 pages. It was intense, detailed debate. But on this one, all of our experiences are the same. I come from the development, my background's engineering, and I've been doing projects for almost 40 years, and I found all over the state, when you are replacing hardwoods, if you plant a 6-inch diameter hardwood tree and a new plant, and you plant a 3.5 or 4-inch tree 50 feet away from it, and you treat them both the same, the smaller caliber trees, oftentimes at the end of the first growing season, they'll flourish and they'll have a lot of new growth. They've acclimated very quickly, and they start growing after that. The larger 6-inch and larger trees oftentimes will go into shock. It's not unusual for them to die. It may take 2 years for them to die. But even the ones that make it gone into stress, it may take them 2 or 3 or more years before you see really healthy growth. So at the end of that period, the smaller tree, most of the time, will actually look healthier and bigger and prettier than the big tree. Hopefully that makes sense. But the cities, Carol and Bill both have seen that same experience. So I appreciate the opportunity to give you guys a little bit more background.
Any other comments?
Good evening. My name is Alan Peterson. I was on the city council and was involved significantly in this. I was very involved. This particular chart. A couple comments. You mentioned when FPL wants to cut a tree and if it damages it, it doesn't have to replace it. I would also like you to consider when FPL severely destroys the tree, there's a tree in my neighborhood that is very tall, perhaps twice the height of the ceiling, and they have stripped one whole side of it. It really is a disgrace, but because they know they have to cut it, they leave it. I would like people to perhaps some mention here that the property owner could, at Rockwell's expense, if you do a little bit of cut the tree, then you might have to perhaps make it for at least allow the property owner to do something when the tree's got a whole in the middle of it. And on page 38 of all of the removal of protected trees when a property owner allow a neighbor to cut a tree in the property owner's lot. You say that providing the property owner where the tree is located is agreeable to the removal of the pines from the trigger. Now, this applied to me. I don't know if they can lot this where I live, and the homeowner behind my lot wanted to cut a tree that was right over the center of the property line. It was my tree. The property owner was going to put a fence and knew that the replacement of the fence post that the building was going to post pop. So they wanted to cut the tree, which is fine. I had no problem. It was quite a decent tree. But I wasn't about to apply for the permit. I did it with permission. But I don't see why, in my case, why the property owner should have to apply for the permit. In other words, the property owner gives the permission, then let the the firm that's going to do the cutting apply for the permit or whatever. But don't require the property owner because that's a legal liability. So I think when we review that, the next thing is the property owner has to apply for the permit. Maybe they can rework that in some way. When we talk about hazards, we're well aware of the insurance conditions of trees and who's responsible for a tree if it falls. I thought I heard somebody say that if you had a tree on your lot that was extremely tall, and could, if it fell down, it could hit somebody else's home. But that was a hazard. I hope I didn't hear that. In other words, if a tree is diseased or damaged from one thing or another, that's one thing. But if it's a live, functioning tree, that shouldn't be a hazard. Now, I don't even see it written here, so I just, my question was, please don't consider applying health of tree to the hazard. Even if it does fall on the neighbor's lot, that's, insurance covers that, depending on how it's established as to whose fault it is. And the section F, page 39, tree removal and develop residential lot. You talked tonight about the growth of trees and that they become, you get unintended consequences when you've got trees placed around these houses. And a 10,000 square foot lot is pretty small. Depending on the location of the trees, you may well want to cut after a period of years a specimen of a historic tree. And I think the property owner, owns those trees and the property owner owns the copy of this. That's the property owner issues, period. They get a permit, the property owner gets to remove them. And then, in my opinion, the property owner then should be required, if it can cause mitigation, to replace it with a tree that conforms to one of the number of trees that's required for new residents. A new building residential building requires a tree of a certain caliber, that the property owner would be able to replace the tree if they have to mitigate a tree, not two, but just one tree. If you cut one, they would have to replace it with something that conforms to the present code for the house. And I realize that this is, if I like trees as well as anybody, there's a lot of tiny lots that we got in front of us, 10,000 square feet. It seems like that the whole lot ought to be allowed to replace these pipes. The current standard, not with this calibers and
so, so we're suggesting a single-family home is that if it's a historic tree and the person cuts it down, three trees.
Actually, if it's any tree, because I've seen, a lot of houses sold without any trees in their lot. They sold and no new trees in any. You gotta have four when you start. But there are a lot of houses, including mine, they don't have four now. But they get sold and the standard is gone. The city isn't checking to see the new owner has the four trees. But I do think that because the trees are particularly these large oaks, trees like that one, was pretty small several years ago, and it's a giant now. It's now causing trouble. Since we had a little cut it and then replace it. Whatever I want, but no requirement that it can be greater than what it is. I don't know what else I'm getting on. Thank you for this. I have another question that hopefully we can put it on the number of the four trees to go residential and some of the problems.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else up there? Sorry, yeah.
I'm a new transplant. I am larger than 4 inches, but I think I'm in the right here. But I have been so far very impressed by this opinion and the details of your work. So I think it's a delight for me to see this effort and concern for dreaming of the pompous. But some question. Why, when you're taking down palms, do you recommend replacing the sable palms?
Is that all working in there?
You're asking why?
Yes, what was why?
Versus some other variety that is native.
There's some
reason. Well, it's a native. I'm sure that's one of the biggest reasons. And it does really well. You guys wait.
That's probably a terrible question for me.
Most likely, that's it's native, it's inexpensive, it's available.
As opposed to a queen palm, which is not really suited for this area, right. Even though they're planted all the time, and so some of them actually thrive.
So you actually should be more a native palm. That's what you
so this
not
area.
The same, but others that you don't like would be.
Okay, so that brings us to a new section, 1103.
I have to leave, but I should make a motion that
we now got to 7:30. We've covered. How many pages did we make it through tonight? 31 to 41. We got 10 pages. Do we want to push on or do we want to call tonight and pick it back up next week? This is a pretty long section coming up. So, and it's a fairly important one, but I'll do whatever the pleasure of the committee and our board and and one of the DECs.
1103 is 20 pages.
And it's a long one.
Yeah.
You want to tack
it? Just put it over to next week.
Do it next week. I think that's probably good. We'll tackle it fresh next week. If you guys go with that?
Yep.
5:30 next week?
5:30.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Well, if there's any permission, I'd like to make one quick comment because we have a comment that I didn't talk about, but I'm saving it for not having to come back with you.
Okay.
To make it simple,
okay.
I have 1103.01, tree density requirements, single families, all developments, single family homes. One tree for every 25,000 square feet.
Right.
2,500 square feet.
2,500 square feet. A major fraction thereof, when it was rounded up. I agreed to this 8 years ago because I thought it made sense. You know, my comments at that time was that fractions be eliminated. But I looking at what's happened is that as the city has developed and then become much more than that, I think that one tree on 3,000 square feet, all fractions, makes a lot of sense. If you've got three trees, right, they have two in the front of your house and one in the back, or I'll reverse it. The side lots are too small, you can't put a tree to the side and not impact, adversely impact your neighborhood or yourself. So I think maybe some relaxation of this,
as trees grow.
Along that same line, I think this came from Mr. Butler, is that we got a lot of houses now getting pools on them. And so I think we went from having 40% of these trees that are required in round, then I think you ended up with two shade on a pen or a red box for a lot. You ended up with two shade trees and two understories. So now we're saying only one shade tree, preferably in the front yard, and three understories. So an understory, you will put in a side yard, I guess if you have several feet.
Yes.
Yeah.
However,
you're
finding it,
One for 3,000.
No fractions. In other words, if you've got a 10,000 square foot lot, it's three trees. If you've got 11,000, it's three trees.
Well, we can talk about that.
Five square feet.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you.